We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and the Lakers are in the playoffs. D, it was a stressful, stressful season. But for the third time in the last four seasons, the Lakers enter the playoffs as the number seven seed as they hold on to beat the Pelicans 110-106 in New Orleans. As we discussed on the preview pod, D, we were expecting the Pelicans to throw a better punch than they did in the last game of the regular season, and they certainly did that. You very much focused on the importance of getting Zion freed up and getting him loose. Boy, did he ever. Scored 40 points, only to be taken out by an injury as he tied the game with only a couple of minutes left. B.I. does not finish the game either. Lakers go down by 10 early on. Great second quarter from the Lakers on both ends of the floor. Take it from a 10-point game in one direction to a 10-point game in the other. Lakers up 60-50 at halftime. And they push that out to 18-20 points in the first half of the third quarter. But in the back half of the third quarter, D, I thought the Pelicans really started to find something, particularly with an athletic group. And that carried through into the fourth quarter, where they had a group with no CJ McCollum, no Brandon Ingram in it, led by Zion with Larry Nance, Jose Alvarado, Trey Murphy III. It was really their best athletic group. And I thought they had the Lakers on their heels. But a huge start from D'Angelo Russell kept the Lakers in it in the first place. And then a huge corner three after a steal by him, you know, really clinches the game. Lakers get just enough down the stretch. LeBron and AD struggle from the field, but Lakers do it. D, they're in the playoffs after a stressful road to get there. How you feeling now that we're in?
So I feel great, first of all. So shout out to Mike. We wanted to have Mike on this morning, but he is
well-deserved rest.
And I would say he matches LeBron in this regard. LeBron might have had a heavier lift yesterday, Pete, but our boy Mike, he had a lift himself. And so shout out to Mike. We will have him on the pods the rest of the week when we get into stuff about Denver. Just what a basketball game. I do want to start with the Pelicans and giving them their just due in this. And shout out to Zion, who basically put his team on his back and said, we're not going to go down tonight as long as I'm able. I was just looking at Zion's game log, Pete, and in this game, Zion played 36 minutes and 27 seconds. He only had seven games this season where he played that many minutes. And he would have played 3 minutes more. He would have been over 40 minutes had he closed out that game. He's only done that one other time this season when he played 40 minutes and 21 seconds against Boston. He also had a game where he was very close in a very recent game where they beat the Suns and he played 39 minutes and 47 seconds. So he has been like rounding into form lately, and that's why the game on Sunday was such an outlier performance for him, and it's why we gave so much credit to the Lakers and particularly to LeBron James. Well, Zion said, you know what, guys, like, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to give my all.
and we're going to see if you can deal with me. And I actually don't think there were a ton of adjustments made schematically from what New Orleans was doing. I just thought Zion said, you know what? I'm not taking this little jump shot. I'm not being deterred by you sagging off me. I'm going to take this space that you're giving me and I'm going to eat it up with the dribble. And when the help comes, I'm going to throw myself in to them. I'm going to elevate. I'm going to contort my body. And I'm going to make these shots that make him one of the more special finishers I think the league has ever seen. It's his ability to be big and strong when going in to you, but balletic with his arms and his touch around the basket and his ability to find finishing angles. We always talk about big players being bigger than everyone else for their entire lives, like being taller and having an understanding of how to play big.
I would say the same is true for smaller players. You have to find angles when you're a smaller guy in order to try to finish around the basket. Now, Zion has always been shorter than what you would think he is based off of how athletic he is. But he has found at every level of his career that his game works because he is a master of his specific game. And I just wanted to give him some tribute at the very beginning of this pod because I thought he was amazing. And I honestly think that him going out at the time that he went out was sort of death blow to the Pelicans' chances to win that game.
We were on our heels at that point of the game.
And I'm not saying the Pelicans win that game for sure, but it was trending that way. And the Lakers were certainly going back and forth in this. So now I want to flip it back to the Lakers. The amount of I'm on the ropes being battered and how do I come back from this when the opponent has all of the momentum. I thought that when Zion went out and when the Lakers came out of that timeout, they came back with a certain amount of Zen focus and steely resolve of we're going to make the plays that need to get made. And credit to New Orleans for continuing to make plays as well. Like, I thought that Trey Murphy floater over Anthony Davis was an amazing shot. I thought even the steals and the defense that they were playing in order to like force misses when the Lakers missed, those were all great. I think, though, that the steal that D'Lo got in the open court that led to the AD lob, the play that Austin made in order to get D'Lo that open three, D'Lo having all the time in the world right in front of the Pelicans bench, which is a shot actually that you don't often hit when you have that much time. But I think being in front of their bench probably gave him a little bit more of like, F you,
I'm going to make this shot. And yeah, he was talking the whole game.
He turned right to the bench, too, and had some words to say to them. The biggest play of the game, not the biggest play of the game, but that Anthony Davis offensive rebound on the LeBron missed fadeaway from the left corner. Larry Nance was doing his best Larry Allen impersonation. Larry Allen's an OG Hall of Famer guard for the Dallas Cowboys, and he was two hands blocking Anthony Davis out, like front guarding him in order to try to keep him off of the glass. And AD went Mr. Fantastic.
Unbelievable rebound.
Threw out that right hand to grab the ball and secure it in, gets fouled, and then goes to the line and hits pressure free throws, man. The Lakers are only up two at that point when AD goes to the line. If the Pelicans get that ball, they're going to have the ball with 15 seconds left and the ability to either tie or go ahead. Instead, AD gets an offensive rebound and puts the team up four and basically makes it a free throw game. That was the difference in this game. D'Lo's three gave them the 4-point lead, but there was enough time left where a couple of stops, you score. The game is right there. It was on a razor's edge. And AD was that rebound and free throw combination was the last pull of the tug of war rope back to the Lakers side to really win the game. And AD did not have it for most of that game, like offensively. Defensively, I thought he was good. And in the last 8 minutes or so, I thought he was great. I thought LeBron, you probably remember this game, Pete, like it was an Eastern Conference Finals game back in the 90s between the Bulls and the Pacers. And this was a game where the Pacers probably should have won. They were the better team. It was one of those like that last dance era Bulls. And Michael Jordan just said, I'm going to get fouled every single time. And there was some of that to LeBron
That foul that he drew where, like, he had nothing going, he kind of lost the ball, and he shot fake Nance just to, like, jump all over him, and then the look that he gave it to the camera, like, the got him. Yeah, and that I think is part of the story, D, of, like, the Lakers going forward, too, is that, like, the two main guys, we saw them struggle on the offensive end in a big game against a good team. And they talked a lot post game about giving their teammates credit for stepping up and whatnot. But there is a certain level of by hook or by crook that has never existed before with the LeBron, where it's like plays where he used to plant his foot in the ground and dunk it, he's now smoking the layup on that. It's happening on AD lobs too. He's missing lob attempts a little bit more often. And so this is sort of a thing with this Lakers team that I think that, do they have enough offense around them? I think that they've really done a great job of kind of landing the plane of putting supplemental talent around them on the offensive end, but super curious about what that looks like in this Denver series. So let's take a break, come back, keep talking about this New Orleans game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think it's a great point that you made, Pete, about cultivating the talent offensively around the team. And so let's spend a second on D'Angelo Russell here. So the Lakers lose the first quarter by 8 points. It could have been 15 points if D'Angelo Russell plays the way that LeBron James and Anthony Davis were playing, but he didn't. D'Lo had a 13-point quarter in the first period. He hit 3 3-pointers. And the only other offense that the Lakers were getting was in transition off of turnovers and open court early offense plays. Their half-court offense was stuck in the mud, but D'Lo was pulling possessions out by just knocking down threes. Credit to New Orleans defense here, Pete. They came out with a hyper-aggressive game plan to ice ball screens and try to keep D'Lo and Austin on the sideline. And then they sold out on their rotations to tag the roll man, and they said, not today, bro. You are not getting your pick-and-roll game going tonight. And Willie Green had commented after Sunday's game that he talked about the problems AD posted in relation to the points in the paint and how it was the Lakers pick and roll game through pocket passes and through AD getting behind the defense that was really the biggest problem for them. And he said, guess what? That's not happening again. We are shrinking the floor against these dudes, and you are not going to score in the paint the way that you scored in the paint on Sunday. And credit to New Orleans and the Zion point that we were talking about earlier. They outscored the Lakers, I think, 62 to 36.
Total difference.
In the paint.
They dominated the paint, but
you can't take everything away.
And so what the Pelicans were giving up were some three-point opportunities. And I thought D'Lo was great in this game at helping to capitalize on the types of shots that were available to the team. So talk to me some about Russell, what you thought about his game and his importance, not necessarily moving forward, but just D'Lo and what he did to help the Lakers get past the finish line in this one.
Well, I think that, you know, for as much as we've talked about, you know, the number one or was the number one
three-point shooter by percentage amongst the high-volume guys. That, to me, is the place that I go to with D'Lo, is that the Lakers don't shoot a lot of threes overall, and D'Lo provides a ton of the volume that we do get. And that's a necessity when defenses are playing the way that you were just describing, where they are selling out into the paint. We saw this for a few straight years after the Russ trade was the most severe of that, but we saw that even in the championship season of teams really like, no, we are not going to let you get into here, and you're going to have to beat us from the perimeter. And so the ability to not just hit a shot, D, but to hit five threes, right? To hit six, seven, eight threes in certain games. It's also why he's such a swing factor for the Lakers, because if he doesn't have that game yesterday, if it's one of the games where he struggles a little bit more, Lakers probably lose that. And so that, to me, is the first place I go to, is like the volume of threes he's able to get up, is that, and he's been such a great screener and relocator. You've got this great shooting threat that's kind of roaming all over the floor and going to different places and will totally slip a screen for a layup if you overcommit to the perimeter. And that is the place too where him and LeBron can meet and kind of plot in the most elite type of ways, right? Is like, oh, they're doing this. Like, D'Lo can meet LeBron on that mental type of level. You know what I'm saying?
Right in the middle, it's off ball cut for a layup against defense. And these guys know how to take advantage of those opportunities, whether it's LeBron on a slot cut or a baseline cut. This is really now the congruence of all of the five out stuff coming right to a head for this entire team. Rui's 5 for 6 this game. Austin goes, I think, 5 for 11. And D'Lo goes 7 for 14. AD mentioned, me and Brown went 12 for 36, man. These other dudes, they want us to game. That's true to an extent. I think AD is probably selling him and LeBron short, considering what they had to do on both sides of the ball and the wrecking ball that Zion was and everything else. But he's not wrong within the context of the way that the Pelicans were defending the Lakers. The opportunities were there for those other guys to win the game in these specific ways. And they did it. Rui went 2 for 2 from three. D'Lo, you said, hit 5 of his 11 threes. Austin went 2 for 5 from three. Those are a ton of makes on a pretty good volume and saying, this is what's there for us. And these guys were ready for it. So it started with D'Lo, but Austin, Rui, I thought Prince was very good. Again, I thought Gabe was great. There were a bunch of like really good performances.
Yes. Yo, Darius, I texted you guys yesterday. Gabe's threes feel like 6 points. When he made that first corner three, man, I was like, hallelujah, everybody drink. And then his floor game is so good that like he had one of the, I thought, the great plays of the night where he got that steal where he dove on the ground, gave it up to TP. And just like that sort of connecting type of play, even if he isn't shooting well, is super helpful. But when he is making his shots, he had a nice and one in transition. He had 9 points in that game. And so that's kind of the type of player he normally is about a 9-10 point per game type of guy. And just Laker fans haven't seen it yet, but I do think that they've seen a good deal of his floor game. And that group to start the second quarter really changed that game.
Going into the second quarter, then they went down by 10. Zion got an early bucket, the first bucket of the quarter. Lakers are down by 10. Immediately, that group goes on a 12-0 run and resets the entire tone of the game and reclaimed the lead and basically gave the Lakers the punching chance that they wanted. The rest of that quarter then went the Lakers' way, and it was about the defense, Pete. Like, Mike had sent us a text with, like, I don't know, man, a minute and a half or 2 minutes left in the quarter, and he said, the Pelicans have 10 points this quarter. And the Lakers shut off their water to a certain extent. Now, part of that was Zion didn't play for a part of that quarter. He was in at the beginning, but he did get a little bit of rest. And part of it was that CJ and BI were essentially no-shows for them. They got some pretty good looks that they just missed. And that's what happens when it's a perimeter-based game and the pressure is ramped up. One of the X factors was whose perimeter guys were going to show up. And that Austin and D'Lo had averaged 21 points apiece against the Pelicans over the four previous games. And whatever team is
able to make their threes with their perimeter guys is going to be super important. And it was the Lakers guards that did that in this game, while B.I. and C.J. just didn't have it. And they got some pretty good looks. I thought their looks were also well contested in a lot of ways. I thought A.D. had some beautiful defensive possessions when he got switched out, basically just shutting those guys off and making them look like, oh, their back is turned to the basket and they're looking for an outlet pass. And so the Lakers found their way, I thought, with the others, quote unquote. But we've talked about it all year, Pete. Like, the five players that start for the Lakers are their best five offensive players. And on any given night, one of those guys can go for 20. And on any given night, all of them can go for 20. And we've seen that as well. And on a night where LeBron and AD both got, I think LeBron had 23 and led the team, and AD had 20, they were not efficient at all. They had to do so much of the like dirty work in terms of drawing fouls and getting to the foul line to get the points that they did get, that the ability for Austin to get a shot for himself, the ability for D'Lo to relocate and spot up around the arc, the ability for Rui to be just a finisher. 5 for 6 from Rui, limited volume. He did not get a lot of chances, but he was great.
You were talking about the understanding of five out. From that corner position, he's become devastating, because if you sink into the paint and overcommit to that, if you want to give him open corner threes, he's going to shoot that at a high clip. If you're going to help a little bit too high, he's going to hunt that baseline cut. If you're sunk down too low, he can flash right into the middle and knock down that little 7 to 8 footer right in the middle of the paint. So that sort of mastery of the system around them is part of why I'm excited about to talk about the Denver series, because that didn't exist last year when we played them, and we were in a different system. It was a 4-out, more dribble penetration type of system. And so, yeah, we'll get to that in a moment, D. But yeah, like Rui's ability to, and sometimes it's only going to be six shots, because they decided, hey, we're not going to get beat on baseline cuts 4 or 5 times the way we did in the previous game, right? You know, they talked about that in the film session, because it was just a dunk fest by Rui off of those baseline cuts. Part of the reason you only get 6 shots is they go, okay, we're going to take that away. But it opens up opportunities elsewhere, and he's been just hunting them so well.
So, Pete, there's one person associated with the Lakers who has been much maligned by a lot of people, and that's the head coach, Darvin Ham. Mm-hmm. After the game, Darvin had a lot of comments. One of them was shouting out our friends of the pod and
roasting them.
Yes.
Yeah. Putting them in the sanitarium.
Yes. Yes. But he did some things yesterday as well that I thought, oh, that's an interesting thing. So he shortened the rotation in the second half. He did not go back to Spencer. He put Gabe back in instead. Mm-hmm. And over the last month or so, Pete, I thought for the most part, he has found more things that work than don't. He has leaned into those mm-hmm. things that work, and the Lakers have been successful because of it. Do I wish he would have found some of this stuff earlier? Do I think that these should have been the initial ideas? Of course. And no one is going to like convince me otherwise that if those things were found earlier, or if those were the initial ideas, that the Lakers wouldn't be the 7th seed in the first place. They might be much higher than that. But spilled milk, water is under bridge, yada, yada, yada. There's plenty of sayings around this stuff. The Lakers have been playing their best basketball all season over the last 2 months. And we'd be remiss if we just didn't talk about Darvin a little bit and him finding his way, him believing in the guys that he believes in, and him finding ways to align what those guys do best within the philosophies that he has, and putting together some groups that do work. And I thought, even to start the fourth quarter, I was texting you guys saying, I don't think he can stay with AD here, because AD was clearly laboring with the back stuff. He said it after the game. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I hope that he goes to Jackson. And even because in the previous game, he didn't go to Jackson, and he stuck with AD and LeBron. And this game, he felt it and said, you know what? I'm going to go back to that Jackson group. And so there are micro decisions every game that coaches get right. And there are ones that they get wrong. And Darvin is often viewed through the lens of what he did wrong. And I would just like to show some grace to the guy who is coaching the team in a way that is obviously proving successful because they have been playing some pretty damn good basketball, Pete.
I'm so glad you brought this up. I was cracking up yesterday. He called a couple of timeouts where I probably got three texts over just from various people of just playoff Darvin in all caps, where it was like, hey, that's a good timeout right there. That's a well-timed timeout. That's not like, hey, we're kind of bleeding right now. It's like, we're not the Phil Jackson Lakers or anything like that, where, cause Phil used to do this, right? Where he would, you know, let them figure it out. And maybe that is Darvin's philosophy on that. But, it was really just the lineups all along in terms of what the foundational piece that was missing. That baseline cutting that Rui does, for example, is a form of spacing, if you think about it, that Taurean Prince does not provide. And we can only look at spacing through the lens of three-point shooting. That is just, it gives you another route, another option that is really a viable thing that the other team has to defend. And that's really what it comes down to. Is this a high caliber shot that the other team has to defend? And so I think the system, the five out, and the real switch to a lot of the three-man actions in the middle of the court. Remember, we were running a lot of ball screens on the sideline, and we still do run double drags and things like that. It's not like an entire either-or type of thing. But our action in the middle of the court has gotten phenomenal. Some of that was just a matter of they just had to get the reps in, and there was no speeding through it. But the way they synthesize that, just having a good base and a good system with also, okay, who are we going to pick on the other team and how are we going to pick on them? One of the things that we did in the previous game against the Pelicans to Zion is one of the ways that you can target a player is actually having them as the MIG, the most important guy, or the low man, right? It's not, you think like, oh, we want to target this weak defender, come switch onto me one-on-one, right? Sure, that's sometimes. Yeah. But a lot of the other times, it's like, we actually are going to make you read something very quickly, and we're going to bet that enough of the time you're going to make the wrong decision, or you're going to react a little bit late, and somebody's going to be open as a result of it. And so the way that they have turned the way they have combined the lineup, now that the lineup's set into place where it's this really offense heavy group. So you already have the run out of guys factor working in your favor, combined with a really good system, combined with really good identification of like, okay, how are we going to target the guy on the other team and what play are we going to run to do that? I think that has really bolstered, as I do think we've seen a bit of an on-ball decline from LeBron and AD, the fact that this is here actually gives us a chance. And so we were bemoaning the lineups all year, and I think rightfully so, because we saw way that
rightfully so
the way that it turned out, right? Like, but there's so much good around it that kind of was a dark cloud over a lot of the good things that are happening. And so now that we've seen this, we can win a playoff game on the road with our stars shooting 12 for 36 in part because of all the good that's in place.
Yeah. And I think that it's important to draw the lines of delineation between all of the different things that go into coaching sometimes and make sure that we're giving proper credit where credit is due while also knocking the part of the thing that needs to be knocked, because that thing isn't up to standard, right? And so some of the lineup stuff was not up to standard, but the tactical shift that the team made to playing five-out basketball, sticking with that even when the early returns were not positive at all, when Rui looked lost, he was not operating in these baseline cuts the way that he was. He was often playing above the break and looking a little bit like, what am I doing out here?
And that's part of the adjustment too, is just moving Rui into a different spot, you know?
Austin's countless drives into nowhere and turning the ball over and like the struggles that he had early during the season, which were probably legs based as much as like fatigue, mental stuff, but he had to get used to it too.
Yeah, he's a decision maker, which Rui is not usually on these. Rui's kind of operating off of the decision makers. And so the environment around him, the angles of everything are different for Austin. And so there is a learning curve on that.
Credit to Darvin for what he's done in his piece of things, because he's an important piece too. But now I want to pivot back to one last guy. And before we wrap up here, Pete, and that's LeBron James, just really quickly. There's going to be a point where LeBron is no longer playing basketball, and that's going to be a sad day for all basketball fans. He's obviously not there yet. Mike sent us a funny text that AD was doing his locker room availability, and LeBron just screams out, "I'm effing tired." And he looked tired, and he should be tired. As you know, half of my household is a Golden State Warriors household, and so after the Lakers played, we watched the Warriors and the Kings play. And you know who else looked tired was Steph Curry. Steph Curry looked tired in that game. Running around, he had Keon Ellis trying to put the handcuffs on him. He's getting screened by Domantas Sabonis 50 times during the game. Every time he comes off a screen, there's two guys on him. Wait, there's three guys on him. Wait, he's on the ground. It's like over and over and over again. So I looked at Steph and I was just like, man, this dude looks tired. But Steph is 35. LeBron is 39 years old. He has played more than half of his life in the NBA. He's played more combined minutes than basically anyone ever. He just completed a 21st season that is more successful than all of the other 21st seasons combined. Add up all the numbers and LeBron is going to be like, oh, I'm like, my numbers are bigger and better than all of these dudes. Was he at his best yesterday, Pete? He was not. He was 6 for 20. He had 23 points. He got to the foul line a bunch. He manipulated the game on the combination of what he did against Memphis and then against the Pelicans on Sunday and then against the Pelicans on Tuesday in order to get the Lakers into position where they could be the seventh seed. He is a marvel, Pete. And we often talk about chess. The current best player in the world has been the best player in the world for a long time. His name is Magnus Carlsen, and he's an endgame master, and he is a tactical genius. And he is the type of guy that understands that when he will get you out of your preparation in order to say, now there are no more chess engines, there's no more memorization, we're back and forth now, it's me and you, figure it out against me, the best player. And there were many times last night, Pete, where I looked at LeBron and I thought, this dude is the endgame master. He is the guy who understands the tactical shift. And he is the guy who you put the ball in his hands. And is he always going to be perfect? He's not always going to be perfect. But he is going to give you the best chance possible to win that game. And he was 1 for 6 in the fourth quarter or 1 for 8 in the fourth quarter, like whatever he was. He was gassed. But he still manipulated possessions the best way that he could in order to give himself and his team the best chance to win. He did it at 39 years old in his 21st season in the NBA. He is an incomparable NBA player. And I just wanted to give one last shout out to the dude who is going to lead the Lakers into the playoffs again to say, you know what, Denver, you got us last year. Here's our chance to get some revenge. And so shout out to the King. One last ride with this dude. What a player.
That's so well said, D. And that's one of the reasons why, too, in the last couple of years, I've been like, you know, sign me up for LeBron's superstardom for a couple more years. Like, he's probably going to make third team All-NBA, but there are going to be guys that make the teams ahead of him that LeBron's actually been better than. But because the Lakers have been, you know, gasping for air for so much of the season. And there is he's old, right? Like that it's sort of just the narrative these awards are very much that in a lot of ways, more than anything, that I don't think he's going to make it, but give me freaking LeBron James going into the playoffs on a foot that isn't as jacked up as it was last year. And it's like, we're playing the champs. We're playing the best team in the NBA, and it's gonna be a tough series, right? But these conditions that we're under now with a better system in place. It was a wild ride to be able to get here, but the stars are healthier. The system is good. The lineups, I think, are finally in the right place. I don't know if we have enough. I really want to talk about that end of first quarter and third quarter groups when we do the previews, because I think that's going to be just super crucial minutes for this Lakers team. But they made it, and LeBron helped lead them there. AD, it was not his best game yesterday, but the difference between when he plays and when he doesn't is just so vast. And his bad games are 20 and 15 games where he's
with three blocks and making the most critical plays at the end of the game. The block he got on CJ McCollum stepping in, he makes plays like that look normal and average when they are not normal and they are not average. And so he's just a phenomenal player, Pete. And it's like, this is it. This is their chance.
It is. And we're going to talk about it. So we're going to do a pod on Thursday and a pod on Friday. On one pod, we're going to preview kind of the overview and then the offense. And then that's going to bleed into the second pod, which is going to be the defensive end where we're guarding them. Or it might be flipped. We'll see what we do. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.